You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. I'm David Bryan, and today I have the great pleasure of speaking with a name that will be familiar to some of you, depending upon your profession, named Mike Bosworth. And that's the gentleman on the screen that doesn't look like me. And so why would you know Mike Bosworth? Well, I know Mike Bosworth because Mike and my wives were good friends. And so we've known each other for about 11 years.
11 years.
And increasingly as the years go on. Mike's legendary in the sales world. And I'm not gonna read you his whole bio because it's just too long. but I will put it in the description. But I did want to read this, which comes directly from the internet. And you didn't write it, as far as I can tell.
Well,
Mike, maybe you did. Mike Bosworth is a highly respected sales professional and coach with a wealth of experience in the field. He is widely recognized for his experience in sales training and his innovative approaches to building strong customer relationships. Bosworth is the author of several best-selling books, including Solution Selling, Creating Buyers in Difficult Selling Markets, which has had a significant impact on the sales industry. He's also written two other books, and we can talk about those in a minute. But Mike, thank you for giving up your time, being willing to do this. Oh. Pleasure to see you. What's the weather
like? I'm
happy
to be here, David. You know, most of the world still, most people, most citizens, certainly of the United States and of the world, are still very uncomfortable in the presence of salespeople.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I was going to say, it's like, you know, salespeople, well, you know, the worst reputation are a used car salesman.
Yeah.
But I think salespeople generally, people have the sense that if they make a deal, then you've been cheated. If you make a deal with somebody who's trying to sell you something, then you must be cheated. And so before we talk about that piece, which is, you know, sort of worth exploring, but did you grow up? Like, were you born wanting to be a salesperson, or how did you get into that world?
No, I, most of my first 20 years, I would never in the world thought I would want to be a salesperson because my derelict, violent, alcoholic father was a salesperson, and he never kept a job longer than 6 months. And so the last thing I wanted to do was to be like him.
So how'd you get from never wanting to be a salesperson to like salesperson extraordinaire?
Well, I had just... this morning, this guy I know posts something on Facebook about, you know, a stream, a bubbling stream. And I've just thought my whole adult life, I'm like a wine cork in a brook or a stream. And I'm just going along wherever it goes and enjoying the ride. But so given that, I didn't really have goals or a plan or anything. I was poor all my life. And when I finally graduated from college at the age of 25, having been in the service and everything, I got a entry-level help desk job for Xerox Computer Services in 1972. And Xerox Computer Services invented the cloud basically for businesses. Back in 1969, there was a central big computer in West Los Angeles on Jefferson Boulevard. And when I joined them in 1972, they had 50 local clients, city government, city of Pasadena, city of El Segundo. They had local manufacturing companies, distribution companies, and they were all hooked up with dumb terminals and phone line, hardwired phone lines to our computer all over the LA basin. And they were processing their businesses in real time. They were posting cash receipts into the computer and doing journal entries and receiving material into inventory and doing their cost accounting and their payroll and their benefits, all with terminals in those organizations, corresponding in real time with full integration with our computer. And I was the red phone. I was the first person they hired out of college, because they used to rotate the help desk among all the senior people, and they all wanted to go on strike. And they said, if you don't hire somebody to go on that help desk, we're going to quit. They were my first year I'm on the help desk. And at the end of that year, I knew how every department did their job on our computer system better than before they had our computer system. So I knew their old manual way that sucked and stuff, and now I understood their new way. And then I got to go out and meet all my customers in person. They let me off the red phone, and I got to go out and be a field application support person.
Got it.
And customers were happy to see me, because I could go out there and they were stuck in a journal that wouldn't close. They couldn't find something on the computer, whatever. You know, I was the handyman.
But how does that leap to sales? You're the guy
who knows almost there. Oh, we're okay. Almost there.
Got it.
I'm trying to help you understand how my accidental path caused it to happen. And so after 2.5 years with the company of helping customers use that system, they asked me to go into sales. And I had two answers for them: no and hell no. You already know about the hell no, my father, but the no was because for the first 2 years, every Xerox Computer Services client we had that I was serving had been deceived by our salespeople. They were deceived on what the cost was really going to be. The cost ended up being a lot higher than estimated in the beginning. And those salespeople were making promises that the product would, you know, vaporware. Oh, yeah, it'll do that. Oh, yeah, it'll do that. Well, it wouldn't. And so in order to keep them a happy client, I had to go out and, you know, fall on my sword and, you know, resell them. And I was working 50 hours a week. And those guys were leaving at 3:30 in the afternoon driving BMWs. And I'm driving some shitty car I can't even remember. And, you know, so my reaction was, I'm not that kind of a person.
Right.
Because the culture I had witnessed, you know.
Well, but so, yeah, so you. Your experience of salespeople and their experience of salespeople were the one you started talking about, that, like, you know, everybody feels uncomfortable in the presence of a salesperson.
Right. So I accidentally, in 5 months, sold more than anybody in the history of the company sold in a full year when I went into sales. And the reason it was accidentally is all the salespeople Xerox Computer Services hired, and most of them were former IBM salespeople, because our CEO was a sales manager in IBM, before he was our CEO. Yeah. And they put him through the same first weeks with the company that I went through, which is you have to learn to demo the system. Mm-hmm. You can't talk to customers, you can't do anything until you can demo the system. That was... So everybody had to learn how to demo general ledger and accounts payable, et cetera. So those salespeople, when they were right out of product school, we called it, and they made their first sales call for Xerox Computer Services, the only thing we ever trained them to do is say, hey, David, can I give you a demonstration of our order entry system? Leading with, and you know, do you see anything you like yet? Okay, well, hang on, there's more. You know, death by demo. Mm. Because you're just throwing stuff out there. See anything you like yet? Well, hang on, there's plenty more. And you keep throwing it and see what sticks.
Right.
And right. Buyers don't like that. And intuitively, so I'll give you the scenario. I'm 28 years old. I've got a list of all the manufacturing companies in Orange County, California that my marketing department told me should be looking at our material planning product. So I was very familiar with that product because I had helped install it.
Right.
So I go out, knock on the door. Back then, all the receptionists were female and all the materials managers that I was trying to call on were male, 100%, 100%. And the materials manager I was trying to call on was from 48 to 55 years old, probably majored in industrial automation in college. And the only way that 20-some year executive in manufacturing could learn about any new technological innovations for manufacturing, because he's a manufacturing executive, is by seeing salespeople. So a guy like that who's rarely called on, if IBM or Xerox or Honeywell or, you know, one of the big computer companies in the receptionist said, hey, David, I've got this guy from Xerox out in the lobby who wants to talk to our materials manager, 80% of the time they come out. Phenomenal. But as soon as they'd walk up to me,
it's a 28-year-old.
They look at their watch. So they couldn't, you know how your body transmits what it's going to do?
Yeah.
They'd look at me and go like that, almost 100%. And this is all intuitive. And I confirmed, I say, so you're the materials manager here. He'd say yes. And I'd say, can I share a quick story with you about another materials manager who's less than a mile from here, who I've been working with for the last 18 months? I never had a single person turn down that story. 100% said, sure.
True story?
True.
Oh.
True story from my personal experience of working with that customer.
Right.
And I thought, so I didn't need to do a demo. I'd say, so I met this guy a little over 18 months ago. And back then, Xerox came out with a new innovative manufacturing material requirements planning system that would basically allow a plant that had 50,000 parts plus to replan their whole production schedule overnight. That thing used to be a 3-week on flip chart process, quarterly, to plan, you know, all that complex component manufacturing. And so I would, so if you said yes to the story, I'd give you the background and where I met him. And then I said, Ed, he was a materials manager for LPAC Electronics, and he had a really tough job because every day when he'd come into work, his CFO was pissed off at him because he was carrying so much inventory, he was sucking the profits out of the company. And the VP of manufacturing was mad at him because the past due backlog was 28%, and he had all these unhappy customers. And so he had a tough job. And 18 months ago, when he discovered that Xerox had come out with new technology that would allow the replanning of a whole plant like that overnight, he decided to be our guinea pig. We had no previous customers. He was our first. I got to install it. And his inventory used to be 8 million, now it's 2.7 million. His past due backlog used to be 28%, now it's 3%. But enough about me. What's going on around here? And they'd all say, you want to come in and look around? that story, less than a minute, led him to the emotional conclusion that even though this guy's wet behind the ears, he understands how hard my job is. And he's already helped one of my peers manage a problem I haven't figured out how to manage it.
Right. And okay, so here you are, this kid, and suddenly a very, very successful salesperson. Are you liking it? Are you liking the job?
Are you kidding?
Or are you still hating it?
Oh, because I was helping him solve problems by giving him a vision of how they could use my product to do their job better.
Okay, so you get from that, you like it, you like sales, and now suddenly, but now, I don't know if it's suddenly or what, you jump from sales to training salesmen. That means you can't be intuitive about it, right? Because your intuition doesn't help that guy over there.
Well, anybody who's tried to manage a sales organization knows that if you promote your star salesman to sales manager, they're going to crash and burn. Because most star salespeople, the top 20%, sell intuitively. They're not following any process or anything. They're just kind of talking like you and I are talking today. And sooner or later, they determine, do they have any mutual interests? And if not, they'll part friends. But
right. Until the next time, until then, maybe they will. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you get from what you were doing to what you, for lack of a better word, like what you became famous for, which you did in certainly in the sales world, you did.
Xerox gave me another tremendous opportunity, because after 1 year as the top salesman in the company, what do you think they did? They promoted me to manager. And Xerox used to mess with your egos, because if you were not a manager, you had this kind of almost white desk, looked like it came out of the DMV or something. But if you were a manager, you got teak formica and black painted sides. It was really upstairs, downstairs. And, they appealed to my ego. And it was one of the dumbest things I ever did.
You said yes.
I said yes. They moved me from California to New Jersey. I went from number one salesperson to number last manager, hero to zero. But luckily for me, because I was the top salesperson, they said to me, 5 times each year, we're going to hire a new crop of new salespeople. We want you to come out of the field and teach them how to sell. And I said, I don't know how to do sales training. And they said, we know, but our parent company, Big Xerox, has a sales training course that's been so successful, they now market it to the whole world. It was called Xerox Professional Selling Skills. And it was a product. So they sent me to PSS school, figuring I could learn how to be a trainer. And I'd have the stripes, because I was the top salesman. So, if you put a bunch of salespeople in a room, they ain't going to listen to anybody unless they believe the person in front of the room really has the stripes to talk to them.
Right.
It's just the nature of the beast.
Sure.
But I have no clue how to do sales training. So I go to this PSS, and now remember what I'm selling, first generation cloud business computing. Well, at PSS, I learned how to sell bulldozers and hair dryers. And sell me this pen, just this manipulative, horrible. So I go back to my management and I said, I'm sorry, but yuck, if you want somebody to teach that to the Xerox Computer Services sales force, find yourself another resource. I can't do it. And luckily for me, most of the, half a dozen top sales voices in the company all agreed that we were unique. We were selling something that our buyers had no clue what it was. It was complex. It took our own employees a year to really learn it.
And it strikes me as it was, at least at the time, it was so new. You know, they didn't even have a reference, right? I mean, like, if somebody wants a new tractor, you know what a tractor's for. Some people, you know, if you walk into a stationery store, they're not going to buy a tractor, right?
Right. But they have a vision of what they need to buy.
Yeah. Whereas
our buyers didn't. Like,
huh? Yeah.
They didn't know why they needed it or how they'd use it.
Right. Right. They probably couldn't even imagine that it was a durable thing.
And that's why part of the buy cycle ended up being when we finally teach salespeople how to create a vision of usage, instead of saying, do you want to see a demo? You know, David, what if it was Friday afternoon, it was 2:30, and you're getting ready to leave early and go see your kid play soccer, when your largest vendor calls you and says, David, those 100 widgets I promised you on Monday, they're going to be 10 days late. And you know, so you would realize that your weekend just got ruined.
The end of the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, because you'd have to go through it all manually and figure out which customers you needed to call in advance. Because if you can tell a customer in advance, hey, I got a problem, I can't make it, they're going to be a lot more...
Right. They'll be pissed, nice. Not quite as pissed as...
Yeah, right. Then if Monday they find morning, out after the fact when their production line shuts down because they didn't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it was hurt and rescue selling. And I'd hurt you with that, you know, what if 3 p.m. that happened? But then I'd come back and say, well, what if in the event that ever did happen, you could go over to your terminal and hit a couple of commands and say, enter, go watch your kid play soccer. And if you want to look Sunday afternoon at that list of customers you can call advance, you could, but it would make you a list with their phone numbers and what they ordered so you could call them in advance. And then it sounds too good to be true, right?
Mm.
So then they want proof. And now we can do a demo. Because now we can say, okay, imagine this, and then we take them over to the terminal and we'd show them how to put in a simple command, and out would come the list of customers with their phone numbers that they'd have to call in advance. It blew them away.
Okay, so whoever the geniuses were that came up with this product, they knew what they were doing in terms of what the needs were out there.
Absolutely.
And I take it that, you know, it's got to be about the product, right? Or no, it's got to be like the product has to fit the need. So you've got to know the product.
And who defines the need? In other words, we were first to market with a product that we thought was great, but nobody was looking for it. There were no evaluations for it. They had no concept that you could have a real-time transaction processing, fully integrated business system.
Right.
Which means if somebody calls up and your person types in the order for 10 widgets, not only did the invoice come up, printed, back then they'd have to be mailed, but the computer would also take that quantity out of inventory. And when it got low enough, it would bump you and say, hey, David, you got to order
you
this
need
now.
More of these things.
And because of the lead time, you got to order it tomorrow so you won't run out in a month.
Right.
I mean, that was mind-boggling back then.
Sure.
That capability existed. And we didn't even know how to explain it to people that well. So we invented in-house consultative selling. And what that meant was, and I got to be in the room for that, we would go around and get all these top salespeople to describe as best they could what they did intuitively, and we'd try and...
Oh, so you're not talking about... So you didn't consult with the people you were trying to sell products to. You were consulting with the the top salespeople to get a sense of, is there a pattern here?
Is there something teachable?
Teachable.
Right. Teachable. Can we harvest the intuitive abilities of our top 10% of our salespeople and put it into something we can teach the bottom 90%? That's the pot of gold.
I take it the answer was yes or no.
Well,
isn't that the end of the story? If it's no, what happens?
You know, when I started solution selling, my own training business in 1983, my mission was to help my customers improve the performance of their bottom 80%. Their top 20% were killing it.
We're fine. They were just fine.
They were fine. Yeah. Yeah. But those bottom 80% needed help.
Yeah.
But after 30 years in the business, I heard a guest speaker one day, a guy named Greg Alexander from a research firm, Sales Benchmark Index. And he caused me to almost have a heart attack, because in the opening thing of his talk, he had 87/13 up on his slide. And he says, everybody remembers the old, 80-20, 20% of the salespeople are bringing in 80% of the revenue. He said, we just did a survey of 1,100 B2B companies who all have B2B sales forces. 13% of the salespeople are bringing in 80% of the business. Now, to me, that just wiped out my mission statement when I started solution selling, right? It's like I got hit in the chest.
Why? Spell that out. Explain what you're...
Because it's gotten worse.
Ah.
In other words, now it's not a top 20%, it's a top 13%. And I wasn't listening, because over 20 some years, about once a year, my VP of sales client, the guy who hired me to teach his salespeople, right? He would say to me, Mike, I really don't understand this, but my intuitive top 20% salespeople love solution selling, but the bottom 80% quit using it within 2 weeks of the workshop.
Okay. But you've just thrown in a piece there. So solution selling, that was your take on what you needed to do to improve somebody who was in the sales game.
I got on the job training as a sales trainer. My last 6 years with Xerox Computer Services were 4 to 6 weeks a year. As I went up to the management ranks, I came out of the field and trained salespeople. And people kept telling me, oh, Mike, you're really good at this. You should start your own training business.
So solution sale. So what does that mean? First of all, what does that mean? And.
All right.
You know, you're talking to a non-salesperson. I know you're going to tell me that everybody sells at some point, but I'm not a sales guy. And so it almost is, if sales were not about solutions, finding solutions for somebody who was a customer or potential customer, what the hell was it before solution selling?
Well, it's still, in a lot of cases, product selling instead of solution selling. In other words,
that thing you were talking about before here. Well, do you see anything you like? You see anything you like? You see anything?
Watch
you like.
It do demos and leading with all the product features and stuff. And so we were trying to break them of that. But here's another problem in the B2B world, and this is embarrassing for clients, and so I'm not going to name any, but their product marketing department, and that's the department, anytime they hire a new salesperson, product marketing teaches them the product. And what do they end up doing? Teaching them to demo it, just like the same mistake we made at Xerox Computer Services. And then to make it worse, now these salespeople go out in the field, and they start talking about their product, but they call it their solution. David, you'll be happy to know that our solution will save you at least 13% a month on this, 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 this. And our solution will do that. And buyers are just going, "Whoa!" Because if you think about it, if you look up solution in the dictionary, it's the answer to a problem.
It's the most common
definition.
Right.
And I said, and in my mind, the only person who can declare a problem solved is the owner of that problem.
Right. Right. The only person who really knows the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. And you come off the street and say, "David, our solution is going to improve this."
Can I help you?
Yeah. And yeah. So that's what we're trying to break them up. But here's the issue. Most product marketing people have never called on a customer. They can tell you all about that product,
right?
But they can't tell you that sales managers use our product when this happens. And the cost accounting department uses our product to solve this problem when this happens. They can't give you customer usage stories.
So can I ask a stupid question? Don't tell me there's no such thing as a stupid question, because I've asked plenty of them. But okay, so in order for me to be a salesperson in the vein that you are speaking about, I have to know some of the details about that business, like what counts as a problem to them.
Yeah.
Why do they even give me the time for that? Why, like, well, I walk in and why, you know, who I want to find out about your business. Go fuck yourself. I'm busy. That's why they call it business. So what, so how does that come about?
I've done this for 40 years, but I'll be in front of a room of salespeople and I'll draw a circle on a flip chart. And I say, "All right, this circle is your territory, and I'm going to go around and ask some of you to describe your sales territory." And I get around to one guy and he says, "My territory is the state of Michigan." I said, "All right. And who within the state of Michigan?" He says, "All manufacturing companies in these SIC codes that have at least 50 employees, but no more than 250 employees." And I said, "Well, how many such profiles are in your territory in the state of Michigan?" And they all, 273. So 273, I write the flip chart. And I say, "All right, today, July 11th or 10th, 2023, what percentage of those 273 targeted accounts are actively looking for something like you sell, where they've actually put a RFP or an RFI out, you know, and made it public that they're looking to make a buying decision?" In over 40 years, the biggest percentage I ever heard was 5%. So now I go to the circle and I draw this little pie, which represents 5%.
That's 5%.
And then I write "looking" right next to that pie. And then I said, "Well, what do we call the rest of this on the other side?" And eventually some genius says, "Not looking." Correct. Right? So not looking.
Not looking yet. Yes.
Not looking for what we sell. Right? And then I say, "Well, how many of those not looking should be looking? If they knew what you know, we could say they should be looking." And, you know, usually people will start to buy into a pretty high percentage, 20, 30, 40% should be looking. And then the question is, well, why are they not looking? And there's two primary reasons and one once in a while reason. The two primary reasons, first one is ignorance. They don't know a better way exists. When I was off selling that first generation MRP system, zero were looking. Right. It wasn't 5%.
Right.
Nobody was looking. They didn't know it exists. So ignorance. Second major reason is rationalization. They tried to solve that problem 18 months ago, David, and they spent $733,000, and they have egg all over their face, and they didn't solve it. So they're not, that problem isn't in anybody's goals or objectives anymore. They've rationalized it. The once in a while, the third reason is they bought something similar in the last year, but that's pretty low. So
now what?
Okay, well, what
sales how do I get that, you know, that large, that 30%, 25% to start looking?
Well, first of all, in most companies, the marketing department does not identify those target markets, target organizations clearly enough for their salespeople.
Right.
It's almost like marketing is, you know, dropping leaflets from helicopters electronically these days, but, you know, they're not dealing with the frontline salespeople who have to go out and sell it. So there's a huge chasm between sales and marketing. And, you know, most salespeople think the hot leads they get from marketing aren't worthy of anything versus starting a campfire with. And for the most part, they aren't, because they're from real low-level people who can't make decisions. And then marketing, their philosophy, or it's not philosophy, their experience is, we sell all these, send all these hot leads to sales, and they fall into a black hole, never to be seen again.
So what's the solution to that? What was the solution to that?
Simpler than you think. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, and I have to pat myself on the back on this one, because this was accidental again. This was intuitive, accidental, and it ended up being part of what I teach. I have this customer, when I'm doing solution selling training, they're going like this. That sales and marketing, the head of sales and the head of marketing are pointing fingers and bad mouthing, and, you know, just, and so
Tom, time out so I get it. So you're talking about the sales and marketing people from an organization you represent, or you?
No, I'm selling too. They've hired me. They've either hired me on the marketing side to help them with their messaging, or they've hired me on the sales side to teach their salespeople how to have intelligent conversations and find people who should be looking.
So, Got it. Okay.
So the simple solution was, I requested those, the VP of sales and the VP of marketing, we did it on a Saturday morning. I said, I know you guys are busy. Give me from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. I'm in the local hotel right next to your building. Give me 2 hours of your time together in the same room. And we come out of there with a mutually agreed upon definition of a qualified lead. Miraculous. The definition is a defined buyer persona. Now, back when I was selling, a buyer persona that was defined for me was a materials manager of a manufacturing company. A defined buyer persona is curious how we helped their peer solve a problem or achieve a goal.
But you still haven't told me how we find those people.
Oh, boy, this is coming to be so timely, because I've had some huge new thoughts about this subject in the last 2 weeks. So the thing that salespeople hate to do the most is prospect. They hate to cold call. They hate to have to go out through the, in the old days, through the phone book. Now it's, you know, whatever, LinkedIn or whatever, looking for people. Hey, David, you know, we're selling online training, Are you looking to buy
my
online training?
My eyes already glazed over, and I want to get off the phone.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So if they were doing it, and the majority don't do a very good job, if I could cold call you and you were the What are you, the executive director of a private school?
Yeah. I mean, I'm really, as you're talking, I'm thinking about the numbers of times people walked in cold and approached me or somebody there, and it got to me about what they were selling. And what they were selling was either copier machines, you know, equipment, or in service for teachers, like help, you know, stuff to help the curriculum, help deliver the curriculum, et cetera, et cetera. I was always approached from the point of view of the product. I was never approached in a way that was like, what is it that you need help with? And I'm not sure how I would have responded. I guess if the person had a decent personality and it was, you know, seemed like we could have some sort of a chat, I would have responded positively. But otherwise, it was just like, why am I giving my time to this person? They're just trying to sell me a Xerox machine.
But if I did get past your administrator, and I shook your hand, I said, "Hi, David, I'm Mike Bosworth, the ABC company, and you and I haven't met each other before, but I understand you're the executive director of this school. Can I share a quick story about another executive director of a private school in San Francisco?"
Yeah.
And in 10 seconds, I would have gotten your permission, because we're all curious about our peers. You've got about a 10-second window with a stranger to see if they're curious about their peer.
Is this the new way you're thinking about it? You are. Okay.
No. This is what I've been teaching since 2012. New way. I wish I could go back to all those 80% that quit using solution selling, because the reason they quit using solution selling is one of the primary pieces of solution selling was we'd have expert diagnostic questions written by the smartest people in the company. In other words, we're trying to make the salespeople gain credibility with buyers by asking intelligent questions they're capable of answering. The problem I didn't anticipate, though, at the beginning of solution selling was that if you're in sales, you've got an extra rock on your back over a doctor or if you go to see a lawyer for the first time or a doctor for the first time, you allow them to start asking you discovery questions almost immediately with no alarm bells going off. Right. But if your card says salesperson, okay, so the problem with the lower 80% is they didn't have the intuitive ability to connect emotionally and build trust quickly with strangers. No, seriously. I asked ChatGPT a couple of weeks ago, I said, what percentage of adult Americans have high EQ, emotional intelligence, said between 10 and 20%? That pretty much supports my theory that the real difference between the top 20% and the bottom 80% isn't IQ. It isn't the number of hours they work in the week. It's not the number of proposals. It's their EQ. It's their ability to connect emotionally and build trust with strangers. And virtually all of the good ones do it intuitively. So what I'm trying to help people do now is say, so your bottom 80% who aren't intuitive, maybe they studied engineering. Maybe they're medical researchers. Maybe they're chemical engineers, people where you've got to have a really, you know, high level of professional knowledge in order to sell it. But those people can be taught how to emotionally connect and build trust with strangers using the power story. And so now we have a structure for teaching non-intuitive connectors how to build a connection in a short amount of time. And what it basically is offering it, doing what I did intuitively at 28 years old. Can I share a quick story with you about another materials manager?
Right.
And the beautiful thing about that is, we can take a class of new hires for a company And 1 week after they start with the company, they can be making effective outbound calls, because all we teach them to do is that 10 seconds of offering a story, reading the story, and then saying, if you'd like to know more, can I set up an appointment for one of our professionals? And the week after one of our workshops, this multi-billion dollar company, the VP of marketing called me and he said, well, this guy used that one story he practiced in the workshop, and his second day on the job, he found us an almost $8 million opportunity that we never would have found, because he found somebody who should be looking, hooked him with the story. And at that point, all he could do is hand it off, and he handed it off then, you know, but he started a bicycle. And the first step, I love, you know, you like the word curiosity. I like the word curiosity, because the first step in going from not looking, but should be looking, to looking is curiosity. So pure curiosity. And if you've got in your pocket a really solid peer customer hero story that you practice, hopefully with people in your own company, hopefully you're not practicing on prospects, right?
Yeah, you would hope that. So that's interesting. What's most fascinating to me is the, you know, that in my naive situation here, that sales was for so long not about, it was about the product. It was about the product. And that what now seems like, well, of course it's not just, I mean, yeah, sure, if the product is shit, it doesn't work. But right. But
the thing that salespeople hate the most is prospecting. It's figuring out who should be looking and finding them and offering up a story. We can teach AI to do that. If you've got somebody who knows how to write an AI algorithm, you can have that AI algorithm go out looking for all companies that have these SIC codes in these zip codes.
What does that stand for? SIT codes.
Standard and Dutch industrial classification. Every business it's got a code, an SIC code.
So
it can go out and find the people, and then bump you. So all of a sudden, maybe you get a text, or maybe you get a short email. Say, David, would you be interested in hearing a story about a school executive director that was able to double his fundraising? And if it's coming directly to you and you opt in, then what if you just get a video?
Yeah.
A short 60-second video, maybe of the other customer hero, or maybe the salesperson introducing himself. David, we haven't met. I cover the Los Angeles region for da-da-da, and I'd like to an opportunity to share a story with you about, name the other school, and, you know, and actually tell the story in the video, and then say, next step's up to you. If you'd like to learn more, opt in. I don't want to do it. I'd love to get some stock options. But, you know.
Yeah. So when you look back, you know, and this is apropos of nothing, but like, when you look back, are you glad you're glad your life took the turn that it did?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. My first 20 years on this earth sucked, but from 21 on, my life has been really great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how you bump into something that's from back then, whatever then is, and you read about it or you hear about it or whatever, and you just go, no, duh. Like who would not know that? And am I correct in thinking that some of the no duh in the sales business is what you've been talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. I feel more important just knowing you now.
I think I'm going to have a new mission statement. Helping people go, no duh.
No duh.
That's,
okay, so if I knew what the hell I was talking about, what would I have asked you that I didn't?
I think you've helped me cover my hot buttons.
But you also, you know, I think you're not patting yourself on the back enough, because there's a way in which you made a dent in this industry, where now I suspect people was like, would like, no doubt. Well, of course you have to create a connection with the person. Of course you have, like,
yeah. No doubt.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Mike Bosworth, thank you so much for being willing to give your time and do this. And
David, it wasn't a chore. I always enjoy you. So,
Hey, Mike, a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Say hi to Jen. All right. Hey,
all right.
Mike, take care.
See ya. Thanks.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryant here on LA Talk Radio.